Hey everyone, welcome to another Vine edition. It's the first one for 2023 and it's a special one. We've got Mr. Johnson Andrews live or remote. We want to talk about some big stuff. Johnson is the number one agent or mortgage broker at Vine Group all across Canada. And as we go into 2023, a brand new year, you know, we're talking about his road to a $1 billion mortgage broker. So Johnson, thanks for being on the video. How are you, man?
Good, buddy. How are you? Hopefully you're having a good start to 2023.
It's good. I think, you know, 2022 for most was a forgettable year, I think, you know. But I think we're going into 2023 with a little bit more clarity, I think, as to what expect. Whereas last year, where it's January, we're filming this right now. Last year, we had no idea what was to come, that we were going to see 4% plus worth of increases, you know, a relatively big slowdown on the market across the country. And now we're January of 2023, looking at it with a fresh lens, with a little bit better perspective as to, you know, how to be ready for this environment. So that's my thought. I mean, you know, look, Johnson, you said to me once that you're building a blueprint, if you will, to do $1 billion of volume, which for anyone who's not a mortgage broker, who is not in our world, that's obviously significant. The average broker across the country is probably in the $5 to $6 million per annum worth of volume. And we're talking about one individual doing $1 billion. That's a pretty big number. But I have all the confidence in the world that you can do that. So maybe we can start there. Like, what's your vision? You know, what has taken you to where you're at now in such a relatively short amount of time?
I think the immediate growth that I've had is a testament to Vine and the mentorship that I've had, whether it be via you, David Gonzalez, and then Chris Darwich. I was very fortunate when I initially got in the industry that I was put in a position to underwrite for a lot of the agents at Vine Group within our hub. And with doing that, I was able to see a ton of deal flow in a very short amount of time. And the biggest thing in doing that, got to see practices that I think worked, practices that I think didn't work. But then ultimately, it was like a slow burn to getting to become an actual agent. There was many different times where I was underwriting over the course of a few years and I was like, I can do this. I can be an agent. But whether it be Dave, Chris, or yourself, you guys kind of put a leash on things and wanted me to go to the market as an agent with the most amount of knowledge possible. And in doing that, I think it separated myself from a lot of people when they first get in the industry, where they call everyone, tell them they're a mortgage agent now, and then look to get business that way without ever really getting a track record or legitimacy of knowing exactly what you're supposed to do beforehand. So those few years of building up the foundation led to me being able to scale quickly, because by the time I became an agent, I was very confident in what I was doing and really could help people.
Yeah, no, you've, I mean, there's a lot of people that come and go. And even though people can have access to the right infrastructure, and I think Vine delivers a very comprehensive infrastructure to allow you to scale your business very quickly and have access to a lot of great mentorship, you know, and an amazing proven processes. But aside from all that, because you have access to all that, is that you've got something a little bit different. You've got a massive spark and like a burning desire to be the best and grow and essentially dominate, you know, if we can use that language these days. I don't even know anymore if that's been canceled already, but, you know, just dominate this whole industry. And that's the difference between you and everyone else, because it's one thing to have good mentorship, good processes, and a very good understanding of how our business works and to build your business off a very, almost a proven system. But you've got almost this desire, like you were just sharing before the phone call started, that, you know, you were sick recently, and it's because you kind of, you know, just kind of work yourself, you know, a lot more than most people do, and just needed some time to kind of reset a little bit. Like, you've got this desire to push yourself beyond what the average agent wants to do. And then that's why when you tell me I want to do $1 billion, I believe you, because I know where you were just 3-4 years ago and where you're at today and how you've sort of, you know, grown so much doing things that everyone knows that they should be doing. You're just executing them very, very well. And so that's a question I want to put to you, is like, what is that desire that you have? What is that thing, that spark that pushes you, you know, to kind of be the best?
I think a lot of it comes back to like, do what you say what you do. So for me, I'm not scared to put stuff out there when it comes to my goals, because it's almost like you're setting an expectation of this is what I want to do and I'm going to do it, right? I think a lot of the times people hold on to their goals internally and don't actually vocalize them. And then in living that way, you kind of can hide behind the fact of, oh, I had a good year, and no one ever actually knew that you didn't actually meet what your plans were. When it comes to my motivation, I think a lot of that comes back to my athletic background, where I played hockey at a high level, and you got immediate satisfaction or immediate gratification of win or lose. Did you win the game? Did you lose the game? And I think that applies itself to mortgages in a way that's different than maybe being a real estate agent, where it's going to be either the client's going to work with you or they're going to work with someone else, right? So for me, I always view that as I want to create an experience for a client, guide them, educate, and advise them better than anyone else that might be competing for their business, because I believe that's my duty, right? I also see in my experience now of working for so long, people get bad advice, and it really leaves a bad taste in my mouth when that happens, just because I know I could have been in a position to help them more than what they actually received. So to me, it's a matter of, I want to get and help as many people as possible because I think I do it better than the person that's beside me, right? And to me, I think that's one of the most important things, is it comes from a place of wanting to do the most mortgages because I think I can help people the most when it comes to the services and information and guidance I provide.
You've also invested in yourself probably a lot sooner than most people would invest in. So for example, right now you've got a team that work with you to help you to scale your business.
Yep.
But this isn't new to you. You've already had those sort of processes. So tell me maybe a little bit about that. You've almost, you know, set the stage for what you'd like to do by saying, this is my goal. I'm going to tell everyone that needs to know this is my goal so I can be accountable. But I'm also going to invest in that. So when I'm already scaling, I've already got the correct infrastructure. Where a lot of people will sort of wait till they're maybe too busy and too overwhelmed before they start investing. So like, what's your approach to scaling your business and you know, having the right staff and the right processes?
For sure. So David gave me the best advice when it comes to having the right people in place to help you, where he had told me a story where he inputted his very first deal when he was working at RBC. He inputted it and he's like, I'm never doing that again, right? It's an inefficient use of time. Now, to me, when I look at the people that I work with, the team that I have, the reason why I put them in place maybe before I even needed that assistance or had it the volume to support needing them and having them in place, it's because if you wait until you hit the point of when you need that help, it's already too late. You can no longer provide the service that everyone that you went out to and tried to procure as a referral partner or within your network. You can't meet the value that you've told them that you're going to bring by working with you if you've now hit that point where you can't service it properly anymore. So to me, my goal is always to grow and expand. But the whole thing comes back to, if I'm telling people within my network or new people I want to work with, these are the turnaround times I can meet. This is the availability that I'm able to provide to people to get on the phone. If I don't have that in place and then they send me one deal and I don't live up to that, they're gone forever. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like the analogy I like to use is like a bow and arrow, where in order for the arrow to go forward, you got to pull the bow back. So I've definitely taken on costs probably sooner than other people would, but it's all coming from a place of, one, puts my feet to the fire in terms of I have to generate that business. But then two, when I do generate that business, I can service it at a level that the people that are working with me expect.
So to better kind of understand your process, because, you know, you're operating at a very high level compared to someone who's, you know, been doing this for a couple of years and hasn't really breached, you know, the 9-digit range that you're at. What does your day look like? A typical, let's say Monday, today's Monday. What does your day look like on average, usually?
So the one thing I've noticed over time in growing the book of business is that Mondays aren't any different from a Wednesday. Wednesdays aren't different than a Saturday. You might get some more deal flow just coming from the weekend, where you have people go see properties and buy them. But a lot of the times I operate every day almost the same, which is my availability for calls with clients range from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. every single day. And that's really the main focus of everything that I do, is being supremely, supremely available beyond what anyone else is doing when it comes to being able to get on the phone and getting back to people. The one thing that I kind of always put my head to is that when someone's trying to reach you, if you don't answer the phone, someone else will. It might not be a great way to kind of look at stuff because you're operating from a place of fear at times, but it's just where my mindset is. So typically though, where my day lies is it's all phone calls and I'm usually booked out the whole day. And the infrastructure I've kind of created is I have three people that work with me directly now, who without them would not be able to even do a quarter of what I'm doing. Partly because just the amount of people I have to talk to, but also because I'm not the most organized person in the world. So the way the day really looks is I have Emily, who's my EA, who schedules everything throughout the day, whether it be intro calls, analysis calls, follow-up calls. And then I have Zoli and then Zach. Zoli focuses only on document collection from clients whom I've spoken to. And Zach's kind of more so my right hand in the sense of any email questions that clients might have, whether it be payment options, different payment structures, how I might save them money, et cetera. Stuff that he focuses on, like it's almost like hand-holding of live deals and clients there. So it's almost like I don't have to be in my inbox and then I'm only taking phone calls or generating new business. So that's where kind of my day goes every day. I'm not a time blocker in any way in terms of this is the time for your intro calls, this is the time for analysis calls or email. I try to be as reactive as possible because then I feel like I can act quicker, going back to the mindset of if I don't answer the phone, someone else will. So the days are usually open and then they fill up accordingly. But the biggest thing is just I have people in place that are hyper-focused on the silos of a deal, whether it be scheduling things quickly, document collection, and or answering questions as their deal progresses. Each person has a niche that they focus on to do very well so that then I can always be on the phone trying to generate new business.
So your approach is, you know, where you have the best value for your time is being on the phone with your clients, making sure that you're available. And I don't think you're doing it out of a position of fear or a place of fear. Because at the end of the day, like you're right, if I have an immediate phone call that I need to make, I need to have some advice on the mortgage side, and I call you because you've been referred to me, maybe I've never spoken to you before. And this applies probably for any industry, and you don't pick up and it's quite urgent, I'm going to call someone else. And if that person sort of is able to take my immediate need, I'm probably going to run with them. And if I'm offended, it just haven't, you know, you lost that opportunity. And, you know, it's the world that we live in. So I kind of completely understand that. And it's the
speed to lead idea, right? And there's also, as I've grown, my referral network kind of has fallen into the process in which that I operated on too. So instead of them giving my phone number to someone and telling them to call me, what they typically will do is send an email intro, where then we can schedule a call typically within a few hours.
And that way you can
work on your schedules. you never play that phone tag game. So you show the speed to lead by answering the email, booking them very quickly. Because if you set it up where people are just calling you and you miss it, it already sets the relationship off on the wrong foot, right? So that's something that I'm very, very, very structured of in terms of how I like to receive referrals with the people I work with.
So I've got two final questions. So beginning of 2023, I want to ask you two questions. The first one is, what advice would you be giving to someone who's a mortgage broker right now in 2023? And then we can start with that one, actually. So what are your thoughts on that? I'm a broker. What's advice you have for me at the beginning of a brand new year after seeing, you know, a relatively tough year for a lot of anyone in the real estate world, I would say?
I would say that right now, 2023 is the biggest opportunity that we have as advisors. Number one, there's plenty of people that are coming out of their existing mortgages and up for renewal that have seen a spike in interest rates and now are going to be walking into a situation where payments might be higher. Their existing bank can't do anything for them other than offer a new rate, but can't touch the amortization or the debt load that they have at the moment. It all needs to stay the same. So at that point where people are seeing fear, obviously cost of living's gone up, there's an opportunity to really start to advise people. And I think that that's an area where I want to focus on, just because I see refinances, renewals, et cetera, as immediate opportunity to convert to live business. Whereas purchases, there's usually a lead time where you have to nurture longer, right? But if you're freshly getting into the market right now, I focus heavily on people that already have mortgages that really need insight. And then also looking at opportunities where you're always then adding value to whoever you're working with, whether it be generating business for referral partners like realtors and or advising and helping with financial advisors or other avenues in that sense.
Last question is for our clients. 2023, what would you be telling clients that are looking at renewing or getting a brand new mortgage right now? What's the advice you have? And obviously this is a blanket statement. It doesn't apply to everyone, just in general. Like, what's your general feedback on, you know, what you should be considering?
If you're up for renewal and you need relief, there's nothing wrong with taking a shorter term option that is ideally going to put you obviously in this high rate environment, only locked in for 1 to 2 years. And in a perfect world, we'll walk ourselves into the recession that'll bring on lower rates. Now, it's only one thing to have that high interest rate in a short term. What we might also need to do if you need payment relief is re-amortize the debt for this period, where then you can lower your monthly cost to then be in a position where you're comfortable still. And then on the renewal of that short term, we can bring things back to the existing amortization. So it's a matter of putting a band-aid on the actual problem for the time being, and then ideally optimizing it at a later date if you're in a position where you're feeling a pinch, right? To me, that's one thing for clients that already have a mortgage. The other side is for people who are looking at buying. Now would be a great time to do so, just because home values are down. You're taking on a lower amount of debt. Although the interest rate's higher, your payments are going to be relatively the same, and you're getting into a market where there's much less competition. And if people actually do own currently, you always want to upsize in a down market, because the percentage change on the higher valued home that you might be moving into is larger than the existing home that you might have, because the dollar value change is going to be smaller. So if you own, good opportunity now to upsize. And also, if your mortgage agent that you worked with before put you in the right product, you can keep your low rate. So plenty of options and opportunity, even though rates aren't ideal.
I agree with all that. And you know, you're one of the ones who brought the concept that we've been using the last few months that we've called date the rate, marry the home. You know, the idea of the market's depressed across the country, most valuations are discounted between 10 to 30% or more. And even though rates are higher, take advantage of your short-term rate, get into that home or that dream home or that rental property now. And then at the end of that short-term rate, whether it's a 1, 2, 3 year, you know, refinance it and get yourself into a proper solution. So, you know, it's been something that's been really effective. And, you know, I think still is a real opportunity in 2023. And hey, man, I appreciate your time. I know you're super busy. Thanks for being on here. I'm gonna do this exact same video with you. I think Vogue does it, where they get like celebrities in every year. So they kind of say, hey, where were you at last year and where you're at this year? I want to hold you to some of the stuff that you said, see where you're at, see where your journey is to that $1 billion. And I wish you an amazing year. Thanks for being part of this, man.
Here, I'll say it to everyone. So hopefully 1 year from now, I've just finished funding 350 as the goal for this year.
So we'll see. We're going to hold you to that.
There you go.
Thanks, Justin.
Take care, man. Talk to you soon.